text your name and address to 3676. Easy. Brought to you by the Electoral Enrolment Centre.
Playing the New Zealand rock band The Found on Take It From Us as our theme tune for our mental health radio program. They're a trio of Kiwi musicians, two of whom are mental health consumers. Let's listen to some more of their track, Long Gone. Welcome to Take It From Us on a pretty breezy Tuesday. Take It From Us is brought to you by Framework and the Like Minds Like Mind campaign. I'm your host, Sheldon Brown, and Take It From Us is the voice of mental health on Planet FM and addresses reducing stigma and discrimination against people with lived experience of mental distress. And our subject today, which happens to be about diabetes, is probably another illness that can attract discrimination. One goal of Like Minds is to emphasise that people with experience of mental distress have the same opportunities as everyone else to participate in society and in the everyday lives of their families and whānau. The overall goal of Like Minds is to create a New Zealand that values and includes people with lived experience of mental distress. As I've mentioned today on Take It From Us, we examine diabetes. And I've learnt quite a lot in doing a bit of research and meeting people from Diabetes New Zealand. I've learnt quite a lot about this illness. It's actually rated as an illness of epidemic proportions in New Zealand. It's a complex and challenging issue, and there are two principal types which I guess I had heard of, the type 1 and the type 2, and there are challenges associated with each of them. We've got a few stats here, and these are somewhat worrying and surprising to me. More than 200,000 people have diabetes, and as many as 19 are diagnosed every day. But most worrying is the 100,000 who have diabetes and don't know it. There's a further 500,000 at risk of developing diabetes due to excess weight or obesity. So why is Take It From Us, our mental health radio show, examining diabetes? Well, it's purely because there's such a close link between mental health and diabetes. Research, as far as I can see, is conclusive that the odds of depression are higher in individuals with diabetes than in those without diabetes. I've got a little bit of other introduction there, but I think we'll just slip over that. But there is one thing that, you know, that this link is so close that there is a term that has been sort of developed called diapression. And that is that the symptoms of diabetes and depression often intertwine in what can be termed diapression. So in the studio to talk about diabetes and the link with mental health is John Denton, General Manager of Diabetes New Zealand Auckland. Have I got that right, John? Diabetes New Zealand Auckland.
You have. Thank you.
Right. So welcome to Take It From Us. And perhaps a good place to start is to explain the two types of diabetes.
Yeah. Diabetes, let's talk about diabetes first. Diabetes is a condition where the body is not making or not being able to use quite enough of one particular hormone, insulin. What does insulin do? Well, it helps take the food we eat to all the cells in the body. And it does this by transferring the food we eat into the bloodstream, and insulin is the mechanism of removing it from the bloodstream and parking energy into the cells of the body. Now, type 1 diabetes is actually an autoimmune disease where the body mistakes something inside and shuts down insulin-producing cells. So in that case, no insulin is made, so functionally it all has to be replaced outside. So people with type 1, like myself, are on multiple injections each day, taking in the insulin that should have been made by the body.
So to simplify this, it's really about energy, is it? If you don't have sufficient insulin, your energy probably suffers a bit.
Correct, but a whole lot of other things go wrong as well, because the body likes just the right amount of glucose in the bloodstream. And if it gets loaded up, all sorts of other problems occur, but they occur slowly and create damage over a long period of time before they actually represent themselves. And this is one of the real problems with diabetes. Type 2 diabetes, on the other hand, doesn't see these insulin-producing cells annihilated. What happens is that the body just either can't produce quite enough insulin, or there is resistance to it being used. Even if the production facility is working, there's resistance to it being used within the body. The consequence is that within the bloodstream, glucose tends to build up, and that over a long period of time creates significant damage. Significant damage to organs like the eyes and the kidneys and the heart, anywhere where there's really small blood vessels involved.
When I hear the word glucose, I mean, I associate that with sugar and sugar intake. Is that a correct conclusion?
Well, yeah, glucose is the fuel of the body. And the food we eat, the carbohydrates that we eat, and all the sugars, which get converted into glucose inside, that's like the energy supply for the body. That's what gives us the ability to get out of bed in the morning and get moving.
So is sugar intake something that people with diabetes have to monitor?
They have to monitor not only sugar intake, but all carbohydrate intake. But equally important is fat intake, because fat intake encourages the resistance to insulin within the body. So it actually, there are two real elements that have to be closely monitored. One's fat intake and the other is sugar intake.
And we have to do that as individuals. We don't have anybody else who's going to monitor that for us.
Well, in the healthy human body, all this stuff happens by wonderful automatic processes, and we never think about that. People with diabetes have to be self-monitoring that every hour, every day.
So when does diabetes most often occur then?
Type 1... most often occurs in younger people. So it's typically people under 25, say, although it can occur much later in life. So here in Auckland, we've got a whole band of people with type 1 diabetes. The youngest can be 1, 2, 3, and going right up. Diabetes is a condition for which there's no cure. So once you've got it, you've got it for life.
But how does somebody of the age of 1, 2, or 3 contract diabetes? Is that a generational thing, an inheritance thing?
No, there's a very small inherited element, but I call it the short straw.
Oh.
It's something that often just arrives. Families are absolutely shocked by it because it means a whole change in their lifestyle and the way they live. And it's a huge dependence factor that comes in. Parents looking after particularly young children and trying to regulate this system, which previously was completely automated.
Very tough if you're that sort of age, very young, and
very
you've got
tough
to deprive yourself of some of those treats that we all enjoy when we're young.
Very tough if you're a teen as well. Mm. Teenage years, I think, are probably the hardest years to get through.
So how do you describe type 1? Do you talk about that being the most dangerous or the...
No, you can't really relate the two in those terms. They both have similar potential for health problems further down the track, and both forms depend on good self-management to avoid those sorts of health issues that arise later.
Yeah, well, we at Framework are involved in a feet beat challenge, and part of that was to have a little bit of a health checkup. And the Diabetes Trust that operate in South Auckland came along to our head office, and they gave us a little prick on the finger and measured our our insulin level. Was it, or was it our
that'll be your blood sugar level, blood glucose level?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
And, well, they sort of said to me, maybe you'd better get it checked out. It's a little bit higher than it should be. And that gave me a bit of a scare. I'd been feeling a bit tired. Maybe I'd had a bit of the flu. I'd been hanging about. But, you know, these things sort of collected together to cause me to rush off to the GP. But he assured me that he'd been testing for this through blood tests for a long period of time, and that this figure was unusually high for me. So, but testing is important.
Risk factors are really important. And there are some risk factors which you can control, and there's a whole lot of them which you can't. Unfortunately, you're not able to alter your age or your ethnicity. It's really a matter of dividing the risk factors into two segments. The ones that you can't alter: age, ethnicity, family history. I don't think this applies to you, but mothers who have large babies, we say over 4 kg, have a risk of developing diabetes. So those are the non-modifiable risk factors. The ones that you can do something about, which are the important ones, of course, to do with the level of physical activity. And I see in the Feet Beat Challenge you were trying to defeat that. That's good, because everybody needs to be doing more physical activity in this world. We've created a world where we've got so many labour-saving devices, including the TV remote, that we barely have to get off our backsides. And we weren't built to do that much sitting around. Mm-hmm. We also need to modify fat intake and keep that down. We also need, if we're overweight, to lose a bit of weight, because that increases insulin resistance, which encourages diabetes. And then there's other related things like cholesterol and blood pressure and so on, all of which come into the mix. So diabetes is actually a condition which has got many tentacles into many areas, and it's not like your common cold. You just get it and you throw it off and keep going. It's something which has huge implications for future health, and really we need to learn as much about it as possible in order to self-steer, to navigate life.
And one of the revelations for me in doing a little bit of research and meeting your team at Diabetes New Zealand Auckland was that, you know, it is an epidemic. And yet I would guess that not too many people appreciate that.
The whole condition of diabetes is very covert. It's been hidden in the closet for years. People don't realise that there are something like 280,000 people in this country with it at the moment. But the forecast for the year 2020 is dramatically worse. 500,000 people will have diabetes. And what's worse than that is there's another 500,000 beyond that who are heading our way. That's 4 million population. That's a huge proportion of people with a chronic condition for which there's no cure.
And that suggests that down the track there's going to be huge pressure on health facilities, hospital facilities.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's been signalled for a long time. And I have to say that because the noise in the marketplace is so little about diabetes, health authorities haven't yet woken up and taken steps to work on prevention and even awareness of the condition. So it remains largely unseen, but more and more people now know somebody affected by it, and it's only going to get much, much worse.
And I guess like blood pressure, it's sort of regarded as the sort of silent killer. There aren't a lot of obvious symptoms.
Yep, we call it the silent assassin. And I'm sorry to say and be so blunt, it kills you slowly. And very few people die of diabetes. They die of the complications of diabetes. More than half the heart attacks in this country are created because of diabetes. More than half the blindness in this country comes from diabetes. Kidney failure, again, and leg amputations. All these things are dreadful complications that occur from poorly managed diabetes.
Well, one of your assistants at a communication seminar that I attended, which led to, I guess, your invitation to be a guest on this radio show, described diabetes as a train wreck waiting to happen.
Well, I can't disagree with that.
Right. Well, let's take a music break and we'll come back and talk to John Denton about what appears to me to be the sort of parallels about what's happening with diabetes and what must have been happening with mental health probably 20 or 30 years ago in terms of the sort of closet treatment that mental health used to get then. So we've got Braden Curran on the board today, and Braden, you're going to introduce the first song.
Well, I hope so. bit spooky, me being on here first time. Hello to all the listeners. I've got a track here from a group called Mike and the Mechanics, and it's called Nobody's Perfect. Hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
Must be hard being an angel when the devil in your heart won't set you free. It must be hard being an angel when the world has let you down. Imperfection all around. Hey, look at me. Of what I'm saying here, that the person here in question must be an angel here on earth, if they can't see a human being. But what if you
to John Denton, who's General Manager of Diabetes New Zealand Auckland, and we just touched on perhaps a parallel there with how diabetes is being treated today in terms of being sort of swept under the carpet or kept in the closet, John. And I'd say probably, what, 40 years ago, the position that mental health was in, where it was sort of swept into acute units or old psychiatric bins, and that's where people were supposed to end up and stay and not worry the community.
I agree entirely. And it's interesting to see what huge progress has actually been made in bringing mental health out of the closet in the last 10, 15 years. Well, huge progress.
Yeah, and Like Mine campaign has certainly been a major contributor to that, along with a lot of the community mental health organisations like Framework that work in the community and I think keep people in the community rather than in acute units hidden away.
Yes, I agree. And I'm sure that diabetes has to follow a similar sort of track in terms of coming out.
Right. Well, this link that I mentioned in our introduction, it talks about the likelihood of depression with diabetes. I mean, I guess my question there is, why? Is it so devastating to learn that you have something that you've got to monitor for the rest of your life?
If you've been living well and healthily for 30, 40, 50 years of your life, and you suddenly meet a diagnosis which says you've got a chronic condition which, if you don't look after, it's going to seriously damage you, then that's a really worrying proposition. The next thing that has to be said is that what are the variables for diabetes? One is nutrition, and the other is physical activity. Now, both of those subjects are actually really tricky to define. What is healthy eating? How much healthy food should I eat? And we all know that, you know, plate sizes have grown over the last 10, 15 years. Look at the size of muffins now compared with 20 years ago. These are all contributory factors to the fact that we live in a sort of obesogenic environment now where it's really hard to get healthy food. And then we expect people to buy it and eat it. But how much and what, and maybe it's not what they're used to, and why should I change? All those questions come into it. So, and then on the physical activity side, you know as well as I do that it's no longer safe for children to walk to school nowadays. They have to be taken to school and so on. And just about all our lives have been changed in the last 20, 30 years. The reduction in the amount of physical activity, the increase in the amount of food which has little value to the human body, which includes all the fast foods and the things we like, right. I'm afraid to say, has opened up this great big chasm into which diabetes has jumped.
And, I mean, we talk in mental health about sort of vicious spirals, but I've got a picture that you mentioned this rather fascinating description of an obesogenic society. I'd never heard that term before. But, you know, I guess as we put weight on, then it becomes more difficult to exercise, and therefore Absolutely. We're not using up as much calories, and so you've got one of those little, not so little,
yes.
Downward spirals going on.
Absolutely. And then a bit more weight goes on because I'm sitting at home all the time doing next to nothing because I don't feel I can walk the streets anymore because I don't want to be seen, you know. So it is a spiral. And we need to get hold of that and turn that around, and that's a big, big task.
Do you think people understand what food is good for them and what's not? I mean, we do have these foods that we're encouraged. You only need a couple of minutes to cook them, but they're all packaged and yes. they've got all these other things in them, like preservatives and whatever.
Not only preservatives, but you'll find very often that they're quite high fat, they're high sugar, and they're high salt, and all those things are doing things to our bodies which ain't great.
So for the price of convenience, it's a big toll we're paying.
Absolutely. But we're also now so busy and we got both parents working that we have to grab takeaways because we don't have time to cook at home and so on. So one side affects the other side, and that means that there's much less time to go out with the kids around the park. And this thing is building like a centrifuge, really, just pushing everything out and opening up this huge space for diabetes to leap into. And we have to turn that round in this country.
I mean, as a result of the Feet Beat Challenge at Framework, we're all being encouraged to lose some weight, eat better, walk as much as we can. And I've just been told today that my tennis playing, which is usually 4 or 5 times a week, is not going to be counted as part of my exercise because it's only a walking challenge. How long does it take to put a salad together? You can buy salad leaves, lettuce mix and salad mix and that sort of thing. Cut up a tomato, cut up a mushroom, put some feta cheese into it and maybe a small tin of seafood, and you've got a wonderful meal.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Yep. And I'd also challenge you to say that if you're playing tennis 5 times a week, then that's quite a lot of exercise, so long as you're running around the court just a bit. And we talk about 30 minutes walking a day or equivalent. And you don't have to do that in one bite. Mm. So three 10-minute segments, just fine.
And take to the stairs rather than the escalator when
Absolutely.
You're getting out of town at the airport.
And then the other side is halve your fat intake. Now, that's more difficult because you've got to read these pokey little labels on the back of food packets and so on, but you can pick the ones with high fat and particularly high saturated fat and avoid some of those.
Mm. The incidence of obesity and diabetes, which seem to be linked, and then we have the likelihood of perhaps depression, I mean, do people care?
Individuals care, but society probably doesn't take a lot of notice. Interestingly, diabetes often is linked with depression, and people with depression often get diabetes. So it's a sort of two-way relationship. It's not one thing causing another. They're both interrelated. And certainly the incidence of depression amongst people with diabetes is at least twice that of those who don't have mental impairment in any way. Mm. So there is some real statistical evidence to show that people with mental health issues do suffer as a result.
Mm. And, you know, when we're down, we're depressed, we're sad, or we've got a more serious mental unwellness, I mean, our motivation is down too.
Absolutely,
isn't it? And,
yeah.
And it's very hard to get ourselves up. You mentioned getting out of bed. I mean, that can be a huge challenge when we're not up to scratch.
Yeah. And we as an organisation run support groups right across Greater Auckland, and they meet in order to, A, provide a little bit of further education, because the more you know about this condition, the better you are off to manage it. And the other side is you do need support. You do need support from family and friends to keep you encouraged to, because it's not an easy path.
Mm. So where could people learn about those support groups? John, you've got a phone number or a website?
Yep, www.diabetesauckland.org.nz. We've also got a really good take the test risk assessment up there with a few simple questions that give you a guide as to whether you're in an at-risk group for this for diabetes or not. That's also quite a useful little tool to help steer you.
And you've got some great resources up at your Valley Road headquarters there.
Absolutely,
know.
And we run various forms of awareness prevention education programs, and anybody's welcome to call us on Auckland 623-2508.
And your address in Mount Eden there?
62-64 Valley Road in Mount Eden. Yeah.
Right, and that's the old Mount Eden Borough Council. And John and I, while we were driving here together, I said, well, I probably used to cover the Mount Eden Borough Council affairs when I was a reporter on the Auckland Star.
That's right, and that building, it's a heritage building we're in and we own, and it's 100 years old next year.
Yeah. Oh, well, that'll be an opportunity to profile diabetes. And the location as well.
And we'll have to have the old reporters back, I guess.
Well, that might be pushing things a little far. Let's take our next music break. And, Braden, you're going to introduce another track that you've selected.
I do. It's from Melanie C, and it's called I Turn to You, which I think is quite an appropriate track.
Dark.
we're talking on Take It From Us today about diabetes and mental health, and we've been touching with John Denton, the General Manager of Diabetes New Zealand Auckland, on the subjects of obesity and weight gain, and these appear to be serious risk factors in diabetes. But one of the issues, of course, and I don't want to overemphasize this, but it is a fact that some psychiatric medications do put weight on. And how do we address this, John?
Well, I think the drugs are obviously prescribed with a purpose, but there is a consequence of weight gain, and we understand that. And the only way to deal with that is to work at that weight gain. So that comes back to nutrition on the one side and physical activity on the other. And both are hugely important in finding an answer for people with on those sorts of drugs and with a mental health condition.
Mm. I mean, I think that some of the medications obviously increase our desire to eat, and maybe if we're down and we're experiencing a mental unwellness, well, what else do we do apart from sit around, maybe smoke cigarettes, dare I say it, and eat too much?
Yeah, well, I'm not a medical person, and nor am I a dietitian, but I can say that food is a comfort as much as an energy source. And we therefore, in times of adversity, we tend to resort to food as a form of comfort. And I can see easily how weight gain then gets applied. Interestingly, though, a small weight reduction, and I'm talking, 1, 2, 3, 4 kilos, makes a dramatic difference in risk factors. So you actually don't have to. I mean, if you're 10, 15 kg overweight at the moment, you don't have to lose all that 15 k, but to lose just a bit gives you suddenly a considerable percentage of lower risk factors. And so the benefit side of the equation comes on really strongly once you start to cut all the weight down.
Well, I certainly find if I lose a few pounds that I move faster on the tennis court.
I'm sure that's
so. Some of my opponents think, well, he's obviously doing something different. But I think it's very important, isn't it, to set ourselves realistic goals. And I actually had a goal with this FeetBeat Challenge at Framework to lose 4 or 5 kilos. And I actually shared that with somebody, and they said, well, that is a very realistic goal. And, to set those goals that way, rather than to sort of set something that's going to be like Everest.
Yes. And the other thing about weight loss is that weight loss needs to be permanent, because it's terribly easy to diet. If you cut down the amount of food you eat for a period, you will lose weight.
Yeah.
Simple. But the moment you stop, you'll put it back on.
Mm.
And so it's a matter of finding more nutritious foods that give you greater feelings of fullness, and we Diabetes Auckland can help in that situation and give advice, and we've got various associated services that can help guide people toward what foods are appropriate.
Well, part of your display and resources that you've got right inside the front door of the Valley Road location is a whole display of, the 5 plus a day, the fruits and vegetables and that sort of thing.
Yes, yes, but also a whole lot of other things, which some of which might surprise people, but all good, wholesome foods.
Mm. Yeah. So this weight gain and obesity, why are they such significant factors?
Well, as a layperson, I think of them as somehow putting that weight on impairs the system inside to work appropriately. And certainly we see it in terms of insulin resistance, And so the insulin can't get through to put the energy we're taking in into the cells. So what does it do? It stays in circulation in the blood system. And the only way it can get out of there is actually through urination. And so one of the symptoms of diabetes, and they're not very clear symptoms of type 2 diabetes, is that often you pee a lot. Often you feel tired because, in effect, you're running your body on a sort of super-octane fuel. Mm. And the body doesn't like it. And the damage that gets caused slowly over time, which is why we call this thing the silent assassin, because it takes a long time for eyes to be damaged and for the heart to be damaged and the feet to be damaged. And the feet, I mean, we've got probably the highest rate of amputation coming from diabetes. And the reason is that the bottom of our feet suffer nerve damage. We can't feel that stone that we stand on the beach. And then a sore develops, and then it won't heal because the blood supply isn't reaching it. And then, you know, a bit further down the track, gangrene forms. Mm. And then legs have to be amputated. And some of the ghastly complications of diabetes can be avoided with good knowledge and good practice.
You know, the I guess the campaign against smoking has used what I'd call sort of scare tactics, hasn't it? And they do say that that can be a very off-putting for some people. Is this a danger in any campaigning that you might be contemplating into the future?
Absolutely. It's a careful balance because food has high cultural value as well. What do we do at a birthday party? We put a big cake on the table and eat chocolate biscuits and have lolly drinks, don't we? Well, especially for kids. And that tradition runs through almost every ethnicity. And so celebrations, on the one hand, we say, of course everybody's allowed a celebration, but not every day.
Right.
And not at 10 o'clock every morning for morning tea.
And so you talk about lolly drinks, but of course there's a new contemporary type of lolly drink, isn't there? The V-drinks and the Mother and that sort of thing. And I think they were all reviewed on Target there last week. And the quantity of sugar in those is astronomical.
It's astonishing, And it's great if you're running a marathon.
Right. But if you're just getting out of your car and using the remote and not doing much walking.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll go to our community notices.
Take it from us, community notice board. Thanks to the Like Minds Like Mind campaign and framework.
And Shared Vision is promoting a youth mental health and employment forum. This is part of their quarterly lunch series. This is going to be at the AMI Netball North Harbour Function Room, which is 44 Northcote Road. It's going to be on the 27th of September from 11:45 to 1:30. Lunch is included, so with the message from our guest, John Denton, just be sure that you don't eat too many of the old pastries and sausage rolls. Yes, it starts actually with lunch, and then there's going to be introductions and a panel of speakers. So get along to the AMI Netball North Harbour Function Room for that forum on youth mental health and employment. Of course, the other thing too is that Mental Health Awareness Week is coming up very soon. I think the dates are the second week of October, so we're only about 3 weeks out. And there's a large number of things that are happening. Toyora Live Arts is involved with organising a number of things. But one of them is that the October gig is going to be on the 13th of October, and it's going to be at the Thirsty Dog in K Road, the 13th of October, starting from 8 p.m. onwards. And it's going to be a celebration of of Toiora musicians and others, but I'll bring you more information about Mental Health Awareness Week at later programs. We also have a Blow the Whistle on Violence campaign, and I'm hoping to get one of the ambassadors of this, Peter McGlashan, who is a very well-known cricketer, to come along into the studio, and we'll be talking to Dale Little as well from the Mental Health Foundation about this Blow the Whistle on Violence, and it's a campaign to coincide with the Rugby World Cup. If you'd like any information on that, you can tackle it today by phoning help the helpline 0800 456 450. So that's 0800 456 450. So definitely Blow the Whistle on Violence, and I think that that's a theme that is very much coming out in our society today. The 2011 Mental Health Media Grants are open for applications. Interested applicants can apply for either a journalism grant of up to $6,000 or a photojournalism project with the grant being up to $10,000. And those figures have come with the support of the Frozen Funds Charitable Trust and the Mental Health Commission. You can go on to www.mentalhealth.org.nz, look out for media grants, and applications, in fact, close in about just over 2 weeks, Friday the 7th of October. And if you want any further information, you can also email info@mediagrants.org.nz. And a few weeks ago we had Megan McElwain in the studio. We're still promoting her requirement to get volunteers who are experiencing schizophrenia and taking medication for it. She is looking for people aged between 18 and 45 years to take part in her study. And you can ring Megan on the Auckland University number, which is 09923 6053, or her cell phone number 021 048 2176. So there are our community notices for this week on Take It From Us. And today we're talking to John Denton, who is the General Manager of Diabetes New Zealand, Auckland. And, John, there is quite an issue of denial. I mean, I guess that you very strongly suggested that by the illness still being in the closet. But there's a denial among those people who contract diabetes.
Very much so. You don't feel diabetes and you don't see it. And I feel just the same as I did last week before I was diagnosed. So why should I believe you when you tell me I've got diabetes? And that reaction is very typical. And well, we as an organisation spend quite a lot of time helping people understand that diabetes, once diagnosed, is with you, and the best way through is to gain as much knowledge as you can about it so that you can drive it rather than it driving you. And I think all the associations of denial, and they can last for years, are perfectly normal human reactions.
I mean, denial is not good for our mental health, is it, either?
Absolutely not.
It suggests that we're sort of not addressing things, living in denial, saying, well, we don't have any mental health issues, therefore we won't do anything about it. We won't disclose it. We won't be open and honest about it.
And that's the similarity between these two conditions, mental health and diabetes. They are typically non-acute in many forms. So why do I have to do anything about it today? Mm. And we encourage strongly that people do take responsibility, because it will affect their long-term future health.
I mean, how do we sort of differentiate between the symptoms of diabetes and old age, where we might
hugely difficult. Well, I mean, I have met so many people who say, well, I can remember my dad, he used to have a sleep after lunch, you know, and he must have been in his 50s then, and now I'm that age, and, you know, I nearly nod off after every meal I have. And that symptom is misrepresented as a I'm growing older instead of a I may have a serious condition. And that's the difficulty we face. There's also a lot of myths about diabetes out there in the big wide world, and we need to beat a straight path through all of those and get people to be able to face up, because the sooner you face up, then the better your long-term chances.
Mm. So what's your advice about diagnosis? I mean, if you feel, if somebody listening today feels that they may need a checkup,
Well, I'd say go to our website, diabetesauckland.org.nz, and take the test. Take the test. It'll take you 3-4 minutes, a handful of little questions, and there will be an indicator given of your potential risk for diabetes. If you're getting into the hot end, the red end of the spectrum, go and ask your GP to test for diabetes.
When we have blood tests, is it normal for the insulin level, or is it the glucose levels?
Glucose levels.
To be included in those tests?
It varies enormously, GP to GP and situation to situation, but it's certainly not routine.
So what would your message be, given the epidemic proportions of this illness?
Well, if through the test on our website there's an indication that you may be at risk, go talk to the medics about it. Mm. And don't avoid it.
Is there any element of discrimination here? I mean, is that why people don't disclose or deny that they have diabetes, that it somehow, I don't know, has got associations with it that people don't want to own up to?
I don't think it's so much that as the fact that I feel just the same as I did yesterday or a week ago. So what do you mean I might have diabetes? Doesn't seem to fit. It's typical of diabetes to have no particular symptoms, and that's really it's huge danger, because then it can lie latent for years. And we hear of far too many cases where a heart attack is diagnosed, you're into hospital, and the docs then say, looks like you've got diabetes. And that's a poor discovery, because actually, if you'd known years ago, you might have avoided that heart attack.
Mm. So that element of discrimination, it's real?
I'm not sure that the word discrimination really applies, because it's actually a sort of self-denial. Mm. And it's not being alert to the real circumstances that surround you. And all we can encourage is that people, if they do discover that there are things pointing towards diabetes, that they get them checked out. Diabetes just doesn't happen. You don't catch it suddenly. It occurs over a long time period, and the moment when diabetes is diagnosed is just a sort of artificial marker on this long curve of development. When the docs say, this side of the line you've got diabetes, this side you haven't. Mm-hmm. So just to watch where you're heading is really important, and to encourage your GP, if he's not already looking after you and you're in an at-risk category, to be just keeping an eye on that.
So what would be the sort of message, the key message that you would like to get across to listeners?
Well, it's be aware of the problem. Diabetes is serious. Don't take it lightly.
Well, thank you, John. John Denton, from General Manager of Diabetes New Zealand Auckland. And next week we're going to be focusing again on the importance of diet, what we eat, food, when we talk to a nutrition consultant and therapist. So that's been Take It From Us, and thank you, John, for your contribution.
Thank you. Important as souls yesterday.